welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. My name is Derek Mabbitt, pastor of Baylor Presbyterian Church, and your host. Now, when I was a pastor in my second year, now in my eighth year of pastoring, we had a missionary who, an older retired pastor who was essentially doing a portable seminary in the country of Bulgaria, training pastors. Well, in the Lord's providence, he passed away. But that same year, we got an email from a man named Brett McAlpin, who was preparing to go to Bulgaria. And so we were very excited about the opportunities. Got to sit down, talk with Brett and with one of my elders and myself and Brett. And we just talked about the calling to Bulgaria. And we ended up supporting him. We've been supporting Brett and his family for the last 6 years. And recently, Brett and I were able to link up over Zoom and have a wonderful conversation about missions. So today I'm bringing you part one. And now Brett McAlpin is a missionary with the Mission to the World organization, is a part of the missions wing of the Presbyterian Church in America, which is my denomination. And in our conversation today that you'll be hearing, you're going to hear about how Brett and his family got into missions, what ministry life looks like in Bulgaria, the local challenges that they face, the strategies that they've employed to try to reach the lost. And also, we talk about how missions presses the domestic church here to rethink our assumptions. And we talk about the question, are we all really missionaries? What is distinctive about being a missionary as opposed to carrying out the mission at home? And then the last thing we get into today is how missions has changed Brett personally. And so he explains four ways that it has impacted him. So this is a really great conversation. I hope you enjoy it. And as always, thanks for listening. Brett McAlpin, welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
All right. So we're going to get into talking about missions, but specifically want to talk about what you're doing over in Bulgaria. So if you could just introduce yourself, your family, and where you're at.
Yeah, sure. As you said, my name is Brett McAlpin. My wife is Valerie, and we have four small children, two girls first and then two boys, and they are, 9, 7, 6, and 4 at the moment. And we've been living in Bulgaria for almost 6 years, going on 6 years this summer. And before that, we lived in Alabama for about 10 years, and then prior to that, South Mississippi.
Man, I can't believe it's been 6 years. That is, it's just how the time flies, you know?
Time flies, absolutely.
So how did you get into missions? Because I love your story about how you got into missions, because it reminds me that, really that anybody can do missions. And that's not like a backhanded, you know,
no, I get
if
it.
You can do missions, anybody can do missions. But you know what I'm saying? Like but go ahead and share your old story, how you got into the mission field.
Yeah. No, I am not offended by that comment at all. That's the way I even say it sometimes. If God can call me, he can be calling any of you to do this. I was not a person who knew from childhood that I was going to be a missionary. Some people have that calling from a very early age. Like my wife knew she always wanted to be an accountant. She's a third generation CPA. So she always knew accounting was her thing. I never really had that in my life, like just know exactly what it was I wanted to do. So I met my wife in college. We got married right after graduation, and we moved to Alabama, and I was dragging her to Baptist churches for the first year or so. She was Presbyterian, so we made that marriage compromise and started going to Presbyterian churches after that. And we moved to Birmingham, and we started going to a larger PCA church there in Birmingham. And it was really through college and then through RUF and then later through the PCA church in Birmingham that I was exposed to Reformed theology for the first time. I had grown up in a Southern Baptist church. I knew that God loved me. I knew that Jesus was my Savior. But really, I had not explored sort of the foundation of my faith and what exactly it is that I believe. What's my theology? What's the basis for my faith? And it was wrestling through that that really was the foundation, the basis, the start of my call to missions. So the more that I understood that I am indeed a sinner, and that I had not lived a good life, even though I put on that I had lived a good life, and I thought, you know, my high school years, of course God would love me. Of course he would want me in his kingdom. I'm such a good kid. I'm a good guy. But really when I came face to face with, no, I'm a wretched sinner. And God loved me in spite of that. And really it was at that point where I said, okay, if that's how it is, my life is yours. You've purchased my life. My life is yours. What would you do with it? At the time I was working in business, had come out of college with a marketing management degree in business and for a large company, had a good start to what could have been a successful career. My wife, as I said, was a CPA. She also had a good job. And we were, you know, living sort of the American dream. But it wasn't very fulfilling for me when they would sort of dangle the opportunities of position or salary in front of me in my company. It just wasn't something that really appealed to me. It didn't motivate me. And it was at that time when I read a book called Don't Waste Your Life by John Piper. And it really challenged me to think about missions. And then also through our small group, our small group leader from our Sunday school, small family, several young children, and they left to go to the mission field. And that was really eye-opening for me. People that we knew well, just leaving everything, taking their small children, going overseas. That was really a new experience for me. I had not known someone closely like that, that had gone to be a missionary. So, yeah, it was through all those things and then through our church's missions conferences, you know, just hearing from missionaries, hearing their stories, what are they doing, that God used all of these experiences. And then, of course, Scripture, just reading through Scripture, certain verses would pop out to me. Romans 12, 1 and 2, big ones. Also John 12, 24 and 25, big verses that God used in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, that John Piper, he'll get you. So
absolutely.
Yeah. That's probably, I mean, that book and Desiring God, which is even the longer version of the same book, you know, is like I read both of those and like, I think those were the like driving influences for me to go to seminary, you know, driving me to go, serve the church. Cause that's all I wanted to do. So, that is great. And I just love that the reality, cause I remember talking to you and just, you know, and you were, and you've said, you know, that, you know, missions is for regular people, you know, and that, you know, listening to these missionary stories that you had kind of looked around and gone like, oh, well, these are if I remember right, you said, oh, we know them and they're sane. So
they're normal. They're normal. They're real people.
They're not crazy. Like, and they're doing this. So this isn't just for crazy people or just for like reckless people. This is for normal Christians. And so, and maybe this could be for us. And I think that's so important. It's so good for us to realize that the Lord can use us in ways that we may not recognize and take us to places where we may not have thought that we would be going. So, I mean, I could even say, even just from a pastoral ministry standpoint, I did not expect to be in Mississippi. So,
right.
Like my wife, we have no connections here. We have no family here. We have like, it just, why are we here? Because the Lord wants us here. That's the only explanation we have. So, so you've been in Bulgaria for 6 years. Have you been in Plovdiv the entire time?
We have, yes.
So, mm-hmm. So, because I think when you first got there, there was a switch that you were going to originally go to one place.
Yeah.
But they said, hey, we actually need you in Plovdiv.
Something like that. Yeah. We were originally on our first prayer card said that we were going to be in Sofia, which is the capital city of Bulgaria. And we have a larger team there. And the idea was us to go there and work in a certain area of the city called Studentski Grad, which literally means student's city. It's where all the universities are. And our team there was thinking about trying to reach those university students, maybe even plant a church in that area. But as the Lord does, plans change, and it seemed to be a better fit for us ministry-wise and for our family. So the team leader at that time said, hey, why don't you go to Plovdiv? So actually just a few months before we were scheduled to arrive on the field, that change was made. So we arrived in Plovdiv without an exact sort of ministry description, and we've been, in a way, figuring it out ever since.
There's wonderful freedom for creativity, and also wonderful room for anxiety and
absolutely
and terror. It's like, what in the world are we doing?
That's right. That's right.
What is your normal ministry? Well, I want to hear about what's happening now, but what does your normal ministry look like? Kind of the seasons of ministry that you have throughout the year, in the last 6 years prior to coronavirus and pandemics.
Sure. Yeah. So our team works in what we call church development, and you could also call that sort of church revitalization, and then with a aim toward church planting. We work with an existing denomination of churches throughout the country, and specifically in Plovdiv, we work with what's called the First Congregational Evangelical Church of Plovdiv. It's a church that was planted toward the end of the 19th century, as was the denomination that we work with was formed in the 19th century by American congregational missionaries. And so we work with several of these churches in Plovdiv and around the city, trying to bring them to a place of health. The churches here suffered greatly under communism. Many of the pastors were removed from their positions, a lot of church leaders also removed, some disappearing in the middle of the night, some threatened, just very bad. You can imagine, I'm sure you've heard stories, read stories maybe. So that's the situation of the church. And so our pastor said to me one day, we have this lost generation of people that were raised up during this period of communism that were not allowed to go to church, and they couldn't talk about church. If they presented themselves as a Christian in school, they wouldn't be able to go to the high school that they wanted to go to. They wouldn't be able to go to the university that they wanted to go to. They were persecuted. And so it was a difficult time. And as a result of that, today, even though we're 30-something years past the fall of communism, we are still feeling the effects. The church is feeling the effects of that lack of that missing generation, that those lack of leaders that would now be in their 30s, 40s, 50s, you know, the kind of the heart and soul of church leadership. They're just not there. And so these churches are struggling. Most of the congregations are older. The average age would be 70 something. And so they're just struggling to hang on. And so we're here in an effort of trying to maintain, I guess, honor the history of the church, because God has done great things here, but then also point them in the direction of what might need to change. What do we need to do differently to reach younger generations? Because there's just this huge gap, and now the younger generations are coming up not even knowing that there exists this wonderful history of evangelical Christianity in this country.
It's interesting that because one thing I want to get into in a little bit is kind of what are some things that you've learned being on the mission field that you weren't aware of, you know, when you're in America. But that's what you're saying there reminds me of. There's a book by Neil Postman from the 1980s called Amusing Ourselves to Death. And he talks about the competing visions of Orwell's 1984 versus Aldous Huxley's A Brave New World.
Yep.
And how the 1984 you have the kind of communist oppressive government that does violence to its people and restricts their ability to, in this case, to read, And then on the other side, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World is this vision where there's so much freedom and so much indulgence and so much comfort that no one wants to read. And there's almost a comparable scenario to that situation where it's like you have the church that's been hurt in these former communist countries that were hurt by a totalitarian government that took its leaders, that, you know, burned the Bibles, that did this. And so the church is recovering there or struggling there because of that. And then in America, the church is struggling because of its affluence, because of its indulgence, and because of its comforts and freedom that it has. And I don't know, it just seems like there's, you know, you have different issues, and different problems, but there's a comparison there.
That's exactly right. And it's also been well said that the younger generations today have more in common with people their age group around the world than they do with their grandparents. And so what we're seeing from younger generations is that we're here in Bulgaria and in other countries is that they're wanting what Americans have. They're wanting that life, the Western life, because they watch the movies, they listen to the music, they see the glitz and glamour of it all. And when they see us, they ask us, why in the world would you leave America to come here? You know, you had it all. Everything is wonderful there. It's great, right? Well, no, not exactly. I left that in part because I see the fallacy in it. I see what's missing there, and that whole "don't waste your life" mindset of no, what we need is God. We don't need all these other things, and so trying to communicate that to people. But yeah, you're right, and the young people here want the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it's I'm preaching through Ecclesiastes right now on our Sunday nights. I release them on Wednesday evening, do a midweek study, and so and one of his common refrains is how the clamor for just collecting stuff is, you know, pointless and wind. It's chasing after the wind because you just basically have to give it all away when you die. And so, it's interesting where you see that from the person who has all the stuff, or the person who is suffering because they're so dedicated to getting that stuff that they're desperately unhappy, but they're both struggling with the same idol.
That exact word was coming into my mind. They both have the same idol. They're just coming at it from different angles. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're doing that and y'all do, I know when I see your update letters, you do like a variety, you'll do like a variety of camps. So, so now let me ask you, when you say football camp, do you mean American football or do you mean soccer?
Yeah. Certainly if you just say football here, that means soccer. You know what Americans call soccer. But yes, in the past I participated in actually American football.
Okay. Okay.
It was a really neat opportunity when we first got here. I was introduced to this American football team. And they said, oh, you're American. You got to come play American football. And I show up, you know, for the first practice. And at that time I was like 31 years old. All these guys are in university. So I'm 10 years older, than all of them. And, I show up to practice first day and kind of watching, seeing what's going on. The center is snapping the ball to the quarterback. And I showed him how to hold it. I said, well, no, you're holding the ball wrong. You got to, you know, hold it this way and snap it, you know, put the laces in his fingers, all this stuff. And they said, oh, well, why don't you just be the center? Well, I've never even been an offensive lineman, much less a center, but yeah, I'll give it a shot. So that was an interesting, start to my football career.
Yeah.
But I like to tell people that I was a professional football player because I actually get paid to play football.
Yeah.
It's part of my job as a missionary, you know, is outreach. And in order to do outreach, you have to meet people. And you need some conduit with which to meet people. And for that, you know, football was that for me. And so I would tell people I get paid to play football. So that makes me a professional football player.
And so you've indicated that you, that the ministry seems to be I mean, it's there is some fluidity to it as you're trying to try new things, and so what are some of the I guess the strategies that you have been trying to in order to reach the community? How do you identify? And this is a great question for just churches generally. How do you look around and identify needs, and how do you assess those needs, and then try to meet them?
Yeah, I mean, that is the question. That's the question of ministry. So we've done that through a variety of ways through the years. Our team has a kindergarten that we started over a decade ago called the Sunshine House, and it's right next to the church. And we have this kindergarten, which is the teaching is, you know, Christ-centered, and we teach about God, which is completely unheard of in other just normal kindergartens throughout the city. We've had parents who are not believers. They're not Christian, but they hear that the results, the quality of children, I guess, the character of children, the type of education that's being given at that kindergarten is so good that they want their kids to be a part of it. So that's one opportunity. We've done English classes through the years, teach people English. And again, we use the Bible to teach them English, and we're upfront about that.
Yeah.
We don't try to do a bait and switch.
Yeah.
We say, hey, we're openly Christian, but if you want to come and practice your English or learn English, come practice with us. Come to this English class and let's talk about this. We have Mercy Ministry. There's a lady on our team who is an occupational therapist, and she has started a wonderful ministry to a disability orphanage. And there's about 15 children and young adults that live permanently at this orphanage, and they are there because either they have no family or their family is unable to care for them, because a lot of them require around the clock care because of their disability. And so we've been able to go partner with our local church and start a ministry to go to that orphanage that ministers to these young adults that never get visitors. They never have people just come and love on them, because in this society they're weak and they're worthless, and there's even shame on their family for them existing. But as we can sort of show the love of Christ to the unloved, to those who in the eyes of the world are worthless. And we've seen a great response in our church, people really getting behind this ministry. And so that's one way. We host sort of a ministry called Pub Theology. And so it's just people like to gather at the pub. It's the meeting place. It's very, much part of Bulgarian society to just be together and commune and just to hang out and talk and sit there for hours. And so we started this opportunity where people can come and let's talk about faith. Let's talk about God. Let's talk about the Bible. Let's talk about Buddhism. Let's talk about atheism. Let's discuss these things openly, but without this need to label a person as intolerant or a bigot, or without putting a name, let's just be real with each other and say what we think or what we believe and share ideas openly. And we've seen several people coming to that appreciate the opportunity to share those things sort of in a safe place, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And one of the things that we did when in our leadership team meeting was we did an exercise where we said, okay, well, let's pretend that we are a missionary group coming from Africa to Bailey, Mississippi, where my church is. And then we went through, so we said, okay, so just pretend like there's no building. We're starting from scratch. What are the fundamental principles or characteristics of that we're going to need as a church to be faithful in ministry, and what are the fundamental things? And it really just was a great clarifying exercise. But it also is interesting being able to think through your, to think through your, I guess it helps you kind of rethink your assumptions about what, about it. 'Cause you kind of see your church as, or your home area differently than you see the foreign mission field.
And, exactly.
But,
yeah.
But a lot of things that you're naming and that you're doing, it's like, well, these are a lot of things that really any church does that's just trying to be faithful. They're looking at the community, looking at needs. Where do people gather? How can we connect to them? Who's hurting?
That's right.
How can we reach those needs? And so it's not this kind of like, this thing that's just, but there does seem to be a kind of a, I don't know what you want to call it, almost like a mental block sometimes. And because we think of, oh, it's foreign missions or it's missions. And so it's kind of this own category thing. But also at the same time, I remember, listening to a guy, Michael O.
Yeah,
remember them?
Yeah,
okay.
Sure, of course, yeah.
This was probably 2005. No, 2008, maybe. So this is a while ago. This is a decade ago. But
okay.
It stuck with me though that he basically was saying that he was kind of offended by churches that said, "Well, we're missionaries here."
Yeah. So everybody's a missionary. This,
everyone's
this
a missionary.
Idea, every member's a missionary. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. And I understand why, because he's talking about, look, if you are a missionary on a foreign mission field, you're paying a cost that others who are, you know, if you grew up in the same town and you're living there, you're not paying that cost, because you're not saying goodbye to your friends and your family, paying the same cost that a missionary is going to. But I guess, but at the same time, you do want the people of local church to have a missionary mindset. Is that a better way to put it?
It's a good question, and I've heard Michael O's on several occasions sort of give that talk, and part of maybe what he's trying to get at too is, or maybe he's not, maybe this is my take on it, but if you call everybody a missionary, well then that's almost like relativism.
Right.
So what is really a missionary? Because now you've sort of taken that away from us, because historically a missionary was someone who crossed a culture.
Yeah.
Someone who went outside of his or her own culture and language, and there are barriers there that you have to get over. And so then to call everybody who stays in their hometown and just goes across the street a missionary, well, that's not the same thing. And so we need to get our terms straight.
Yeah.
I'm not offended when people say I'm a missionary to my community, because I understand what they mean.
Yeah.
And so we do need to have that mindset. Do we have to call it a missionary mindset or a Christian mindset? That's a good question, because to live like Christ is to go to these people. So, whatever we want to call it, we do all need to have whatever that mindset is.
Yeah. And I think it's maybe just simpler to say, look, we're working out the Great Commission in different contexts. And
sure.
So people who do cross those cultural barriers, who do, they're paying an extra cost, yet, you know what, we call them missionaries. But we still are called to the Great Commission where we're at. And so there is a lot of, crossover and similarity in certain aspects. But also I think it's important to recognize the cost that missionaries do pay, as they are giving up, seeing family members for extended periods of time and giving up the comforts of the culture that they know and really trying to go as a foreigner into a place mm-hmm. where they're unknown and they don't know the community. And I mean, or even in cases don't know the language yet.
Exactly. The other thing I would add to that is there might be people who are feeling called to missions, but they might use that as an excuse to say, oh, well, I'm already a missionary to my community, therefore I don't actually have to go around the world to be a missionary, even though I feel that God may be calling me to that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's helpful because it's one thing. After listening to him, I was, you know, even when I became a pastor, I was careful to make sure that we refer to missionaries specifically as missionaries, but at the same time that we don't lose the sense of, like you said, whatever you want to call it, a missional mindset, a missionary mindset, or whatever that aspect is, that we need to look at our own community, at our own ministry, not as it's just who we are and what we've always done, but who is this community? How do we get the gospel out? How do we connect with people? So it's really sometimes it's a struggle to figure that out. So you've been on the mission field for 6 years. And so what are some things that, are there any things that, how has that changed you over the last 6 years? Are there specific things that you've noticed you're like, wow, I don't believe this anymore? Not saying your theology's changed, you know what I mean? But just mean like, I used to think this way about life, and now I think more this way. One of the things that stand out to me when you were last at our church a while back, you had talked about, you know, safety. And I think a lot of people think about safety whenever they think about missionaries in a foreign country. But your response was essentially, you know, we're safe because we're with the Lord. Like, the Lord is with us. Like, that's why we're safe. So do you have some things?
Yeah, sure. There are a number of ways that God has changed me through these experiences. That safety thing, that's an interesting one, because I have to stop short of almost rebuking people when they say, aren't you afraid? And I say, well, where's your faith? Where's your faith in God? Do you read your Bible? Because he's the one that numbers the hairs on your head. And it's very clear in scripture that if you are obedient and you are faithful, God is taking care of you. And if that means for you suffering, which it has for untold multitudes of Christians, then that's what God has for you. But it is leading to your ultimate good and God's glory. And I think that's where a lot of us get tripped up. And so I'm not quick to just come down on people so harshly, because we're all, you know, in different places in our journey, our spiritual journey, and kind of working through that. But I do want to challenge people to think differently in that way. And what does it mean to really be safe, and who holds that safety? But in a more practical sense, the last time we came back on HMA, there was at the local Walmart in Laurel, Mississippi, where our family lives, there was somebody held up at gunpoint. And so I jokingly told my family, I'm a little scared to go back and see y'all, because you know, we might get held up at gunpoint, and that never happens where we live. So I sort of told them, are you sure it's safe to live here? Shouldn't you maybe move to Bulgaria where we are? And so it's almost the reverse of that sometimes. But other ways that the Lord has changed me, I think I have much more of an affinity or a sympathy or an empathy for the sojourner. And as you look at the world, there are millions and millions, more than 60 million now, displaced peoples throughout the world. And these are immigrants, refugees, and they are being forced, many of them, from their homeland because of persecution or war or disease or famine or whatever it is. They're having to leave. And having lived now in another country for a number of years, I know how hard it is to live in a country that's not your own. I know how hard it is to leave your family, to leave your church community, to leave your job, to leave your small group, to leave everything that's familiar to you and go to a place where you know almost no one. You don't speak the language. You don't understand the customs. You don't know even how to buy groceries. I mean, that first time when you go to the grocery store and you can't read the labels and there aren't any pictures and you're trying to figure out what everything is. And I understand that. And so I have I'm much more sympathetic to people who are crossing these borders, and many of them forced to do it. And so that's one way that, that the Lord has sort of opened my eyes, and I pray that, that he will open the eyes of American churches to see the wonderful opportunity that we have to show the love of Christ to these people who are pouring into our country. And I'm not a politician. I know there are huge political issues at stake there, and I'm not saying they're simple. But as the church, I think our first response should be, how do we love these people?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have to answer those political questions, too. You know, how do we sustain our country when, you know, we feel like we're being overrun? Those are valid questions. I'm not saying they're not valid. But we also have to respond with the love of Christ. So that's one way. Another way is I'm constantly being humbled. Because I, in the States, like I said, I was a sort of a businessman. I was pretty good at it, I think. I'm an independent person. I like to think that I sort of have control of my life. If I, you know, save up my money and I'm putting money into retirement and I'm working hard, then the results are going to come and I'm going to be taken care of. And I think a lot of Americans think that way. And that's where I was. That I sort of control my own destiny. And that is almost the antithesis to faith. I'll say it's a barrier to faith, to true faith. Yes, we work hard, but God brings the results. We don't control it. We think we control it, but we don't control it. And I'm always being humbled now because I can't do a lot of the things that I could do in my home culture. I can't, or at least when we first got here, I couldn't go by myself to the residency office and get my residency renewed because the people in the office for foreigners only speak Bulgarian. They don't even speak English, which as an American, I'm thinking this doesn't make any logical sense. You know, the people in the foreign office should speak English. But they don't. And I couldn't do that by myself. I'm so ill-equipped for many of the tasks that I have to do, and I feel completely humbled by the things that God brings into my life that I have to do that I cannot do.
So did so are you saying that part of that humility was kind of that that independent spirit of kind of being able to do it on your own, and then realizing that, you know, I have to rely on other people from the get-go here. Learning to be, learning to depend and have to trust other people, and I people that you probably just met, I would assume, because I'm assuming you didn't bring any Bulgarian speaking family members or friends with you. So
no, exactly. You're exactly right. Yeah. So having to ask for help, which for people like me, is a huge sort of step out. You know, because I want to be able to do it, but I have to sort of humble myself and say, hey, I need some help here. I can't do this. And so, yeah, that's one way.
Yeah, that's one thing my wife reminds me. I have a very hard time asking for help. But it's weird though. I had a realization, which was, I realized that I didn't ask for help. I didn't want to ask people for help because it wasn't that I was afraid that people were going to let me down. I was afraid that if I asked for help and they invest in me, then I was going to let them down.
Hmm.
So it's kind of the reverse of it. So you talked about sympathy for the sojourner, humility, having to learn to depend on others, needing to ask for help from others. Are there any other ways that I'm sure there are, but anyway, are there any other big ones that you wanted to share? Or
let's say, I guess the only other major big one would be resolving conflict in a healthy way. When you are forced out of your bubble, the bubble that you're used to, and you have to, you know, rub shoulders with other types of people, rub shoulders with people from other cultures, and whether it's in another language or maybe just it could be other American missionaries that are from other parts of the country or from different backgrounds or different personalities. And I think we're just constantly put together with people who are unlike us, which forces us again out of our comfort zone and things that would lead to conflict. We have to deal with them, and we have to try to deal with them in a way that honors Christ, because we're always modeling before our Bulgarian brothers and sisters. We're always kind of on stage and being watched in that way, and we fail a lot, and that's very also humbling.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, resolving conflict, you know, some of the, you know, half the time it's apologizing.
That's right.
I mean, that is a resolution to conflict, is to apologize. So.
Yes.
It's usually not the one that we want to do, but it is.
Yeah, it's not the one we jump to very quickly off the bat.
Yeah. All right. Well, that'll wrap it up for us today. I hope you enjoyed part one of my conversation with Brett McAlpin. Be sure to come back for the next episode tomorrow, where we finish up our conversation. And if you want to get in touch with me, you have a comment or a suggestion for the podcast, you can contact me at eric@baileychurch.com. And for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mabbitt. And remember, just one step at a time.